The Perth Football Podcast is proudly brought to you by Macron Store Perth, an industry leader in quality teamwear specialising in grassroots, semi-pro and professional team attire. Visit the Macron Sports Hub Perth Facebook page for more. Thank you to Macron for helping us keep the pod running and for their continuous involvement in community sport.
Welcome to another episode of the Perth Football Podcast. It's just me and Sam Giddies in the studio today. Tommy's got a bit of a cold, so we're sending well wishes his way. And the times just couldn't align for us to get the intrepid reporters from the UK to talk about the games. But we are still going to have a little bit of an insert from Ben Gilby later on. But as mentioned earlier, we've got Sam Giddies joining us on the line. Sam, how are you? How's the week been?
Good, good. First day back to school. Work, so a bit tired, but we go.
But we go. Nice and refreshed, yeah, right? I'm sure teachers are very, very refreshed right now this week.
Yeah. Something like that.
I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you, what was your Macron moment of the week? And it can be football, it can be anything related. Just give us a Macron moment of the week for you.
Macron moment of the week. I've caught me on the spot. I actually think it was, I would say my team, but I'm biased because I think they played really, really well in the 21s. I think they did really well there, so it's a big credit to them. But I guess for me it was watching the women's FA Cup semi-final. It was Spurs versus Leicester. Underdogs in the final. I think they got United anyway, and Leicester went ahead, and then it was all Spurs, and then eventually Spurs got the goal, and then they score in the last few minutes, and you can just see the joy. You know, all the emotions in football that we love, like the when you're on the winning team, obviously. But yeah, I think that was a good one for women's football.
I had a lovely moment. My Macron moment of the week from the women's game is I was at the Balcatta game where they went and visited Dorrien Gardens and played Perth, and I met an old family friend, Azaria Dondo, who's was playing for Bassendean for a few years and kind of switched over to play for Balcatta. And she's been playing Bassendean but playing women's, and we kind of was saying, listen, I think you're pretty good, I think you can go across and try in some of the big leagues. And she managed to get herself to Balcatta and started off playing under 17s and has now made a couple appearances for the under 21. So just good to like see that story and see that family friend, but also see that the progression, the pathway is there. So if you've got any friends, any female footballers that you think is really, really good, I'd really encourage them to get into this MPL setup, because she's been talking about how just the learning and the growth is just beyond what she was thinking about. But also kind of going on the back of that, I've been speaking to some people and who've been telling me that just the amount of women playing football this year, the registrations has gone crazy. It's gone absolutely crazy from the juniors all the way up. So that's going to be a positive thing. Have you heard anything about the crazy registration and the demand for female coaches and stuff like that, Sam?
I think, they actually, Chris Ola and Faye Chambers have been running a female-only course or a prerequisite for the C licence the last two Mondays at the football centre. So, and you can see people turning up there, and there's quite a large amount of numbers. And if you go on the courses, you know it's predominantly men. So, and usually when they run a female course, there's not as many. So I think from a coaching perspective, there's more females that want to be involved in coaching, which I think will benefit the players as well. And I think we're seeing a lot younger girls coming through and they are starting to play. And I think the big thing for me is they're walking around with the Matilda's names on the back of the shirts. It's so cool. And things, or like, you know, like the amount of Lucy Bronze shirts I see as well, like with Lionesses and stuff is huge, especially here. And I just think back growing up, you know, like I had, like, you know, like you could only ever be male players. No, I was never a lady, was I? It was always West Brom. It's like Paul Robinson. Like Ben Foster was the most exciting we got. But yeah.
Yeah, like picking back on that, like it's so cool seeing the shirts now, right? I see Sam everywhere, and I saw this little like skit at the game as well, and I was like, this is awesome, like this is legitimately awesome. So it's good to see. But that is the end of the Macron Moment of the Week. We'll be back with part one, where we do a little bit of a little bit of a touch on the Perth SC Belcata game, and we have a little bit of a snippet from Ben Gilby. So we'll be back with that right after this. And we're back. We'll go straight into the match of the round, so to speak, which would have been Perth SC versus Belcata Etna, and just a lot of moving parts, a lot of narrative, a lot of storylines in here, of course. New coaches for both sides. One of the 15 Pete Rakic derbies where he's played for the previous team or coached the previous team or had players from the previous team or is his best mate on the previous team or it's someone that he is involved with in the previous team, so to speak. So it's one of those games. And I say this in the nicest way, Pete, so please don't be offended by that. And it ends up Perth SC 2, Belcata Etna 1. We did a bit of a deep dive into the game. First goal scored by Jess Flannery. The second one is a own goal, but you know, Alan Lincoln is claiming it, so shout out to her. And then the goal for Belcata was an equaliser to make it was a goal to make it 2-1. Yeah, as I said, we did a deep dive, and we've got a bit of a snippet from Ben Gilby that we'll insert in a bit. But just wanted to get your thoughts and perspective on the game, Sam. Was there anything that you kind of saw or noticed in the match?
I actually think, obviously, you know, I said a couple of weeks ago I was looking forward to this fixture. Not just because of the player movements, obviously that always adds a bit of spice to it, and Pete moving there, that always does. But I just thought that the two teams, they're going to be up there, right? And it's always, we always say, okay, if you're going to win the title, you have to beat Red Star. And I just think these two teams were potentially the closest we were going to get to who's going to be the team that's going to do it for the league. You know what I mean? And so that's why I wanted to see this game. But I think Perth are really good. I think they come out the blocks early doors. I think they've done that in every game I've watched them. They press aggressive. They press really quickly. And they like to get in your faces early on in the game to let you know you're there. And, you know, the hustle up front from Jess Flannery and Lynx, I think Ella Lincoln, you know, like she was causing a bit of chaos for the back line at Belcata. And I think then even when she sits off, you've got to beat, you know, Charlie in midfield and then the other midfielders, you know, who I know Slouch is either in the Perth midfield. So I just think Perth coming out the gates early doors and putting pressure on Belcata, it took Belcata in comparison time to get out of second gear. And by the time they did, I think they probably left themselves a bit too much.
Yeah, it kind of did feel that way. Once they had that early lead, they could kind of sit off and decide when to press, when not to press. We mentioned it in the full-time whistle that they had just this really tactically disciplined midfield where Charlie and Sam Mathers kind of just sat in but knew when to destroy, knew when to push. They kept the ball so well when they recycled it. And when you look at that team and you've got like Kim McCartney playing centre-half, and she could play anywhere if she wanted to. She's technically that good. It caused a lot of trouble for them. And I think for Pete, when you look at that squad that he's got right now, he's a couple key players. And I think you can't really talk about how much missing Judy Connolly is for that team, because she's someone who can play six, she can play eight, she can play 10, and she can really just link the midfield as well.
I think Judy will be a big miss for them. I think, yeah, just what you said, the linking up, I think sometimes people underrate her a bit, so they don't necessarily mark her. And then when they do, they free up space for, you know, an Abby Meekins or, and maybe it's different if, you know, we mentioned Kat came in, you know, when she was playing, she might pull a bit of strings, which then gives more freedom for Lucy Jerram and Jamie Lee at wide. And I think Mo Prinsloo did what she could, but I think it was just, I don't know if there was enough service into them in the early parts of the game, really.
Yeah, and you can kind of see that they're missing just that something or that third player in that midfield area or zone. And I like when you think about this game, right? Like Sam Mathers playing midfield and playing a very disciplined role in that midfield, right? And they kind of put a lot of their strengths in the middle of the park, Perth SC, right? Whereas, like you were mentioning, Balcata's a lot of their strength. You've got Lucy Jerome on one side, Jamie Nagel on the other side. And it's okay, well, if we can get the ball to these people and they're isolated, we can try to get a lot of joy here. But it's got to go through the middle first. And if it doesn't get through the middle, like how are you gonna get that isolation? You know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah, no, I agree.
All right, look, we'll go on and we'll add that snippet from Gilby. You can listen to that right now. He's got an interview where he has a quick conversation as well around Morgan Springer, the goalkeeper from UWA. It's a terrific chat, so we'll play that for you right now.
No.
So this week I had the privilege to listen to UWA Netherlands goalkeeper Morgan Springer speaking about how she's grabbing her second chance at being a footballer. The American has overcome a benign brain tumour and a stomach ulcer to fight back and now come across to WA to play for UWA Netherlands in their debut season in the NPL. In our conversation, Springer told me that originally she was looking to move to play in Italy from Spain, but in the lead up to the potential move, she was suffering from broken fingers and had other symptoms such as blurry vision and tiredness and headaches and having trouble remembering things. And then after being referred to a doctor, they found this incredible brain tumour and a stomach ulcer, which forced Springer to take over a year and a half off of football to recover. It was a really incredible interview Morgan did with me for Impetus. And it just, again, shows to highlight the incredible stories that players have to share in the competition, the NWL WA. And then, of course, this weekend we had that huge game on Saturday where Perth Soccer Club took on Balcata Etna at Drury Gardens. Massive game for so many reasons, with players on both sides coming up against their former employers. Of course, Pete Rakic, the now at Balcata, was head coach at Perth Soccer Club last year. And Perth Soccer Club were so impressive for me on Saturday night. It wasn't just the fact that they won the game. It was the fact that they were just so well organised, so tactically astute. They employed a really tight press on Balcata right from the get-go. That limited Balcata's potential ball-playing skills and their tendency to like to try and thread balls around the pitch. And it wasn't just that. They also able to put players into the channels as well. So when Balcata had the ball, not only did they have the Azuri shirt right in their face to deny them, but also when they were trying to, Balcata were looking for the outlet, there were Perth players all over the wings as well for them to have no space to play into. It was really smart tactical play by Perth Soccer Club. And two really impressive goals for Perth as well. That superb opening strike with Jess Flannery there. I mean, Ella Lincoln turned to her opponent beautifully in the setup and then advanced up that centre channel to find Flannery. And that was some finish there from Jess Flannery, who put in another brilliant night's work performance there. She's such a hard worker there. And then the second goal, of course, came early in the second half. Ella Lincoln claiming it went straight from the corner. Playing it back on the internet a couple of times, it did look like it flew straight in. Whether or not other people will officially claim it as an own goal, but I can definitely see why Ella is claiming that for hers. Balcata then got the goal back right at the end with a trademark thumping free kick from former Perth Soccer Club player Abby Meekins. But try as Balcata might, they couldn't get back into the game, and this was a really impressive victory for Perth Soccer Club, and it's all on in the NPLWA this season. The results over this weekend with NTC now 100% along with the Imperius Red Star at the top. This is going to be a heck of a season.
All right, thank you so much, Ben. We'll move into one of the other games, and this is the joy that we've got here, Sam, is you managed to see all the games. So Malmö FC had they played Subiaco, and it was 1-1 to Malmö FC and Subiaco 4. Give us your thoughts on the game. I saw a lovely little drag back and a great goal for Frankie Steven, for Frankie Murray, not Frankie Stevens.
Give us your thoughts on the game. I actually think the scoreline, it's 4-1, right? So it looks like a demolition, but I actually think for large periods it was quite equal. It was very in the middle of the park a lot of the times, and you know, Subia go forward, they'd have a bit of possession, and they'd break, they'd have a chance, and then Murdoch would go and do the same. And I think the difference in the end was the creation of chances. Subia just created better quality opportunities to score, and I think then they took them. So the first goal was a good goal. I think the second one was at like a long range screamer. The third one for them was a flicked header from a free kick, and then the final one, I think I don't think Tina Campos was too happy about it. I think she had that stall right off her feet, but she'll live with it. She'll live with it.
It's so funny. If you get a chance, go watch that last goal, and it's like it's the ball's coming across the box. And you've got Tania Campos kind of like going in one direction as if she's about to like swivel and kick. But then I'm pretty sure it is Dakota Van Vogt who just like charges it, steams it through, scores. Yeah. And it kind of is embarrassed, just turns around and doesn't even want to look at Tania.
She knows. And Tina's like passive, like super aggressive, like power pose as well. Like, what are you doing? She's like, oh. I think it's better because she waits for her to get there, and she's like, actually just kidding. Just
score. And it, like, does it right after, like, Tina has that assist for Frankie, not Frankie Stevens, but Frankie Murray Hockey right at the start. But yeah, it's a terrific performance from Subiaco. And we've been talking about how they've got a pretty good squad right now, and they can really, really challenge for stuff, right? And you know, they're still missing some key players getting back into the squad, into the lineup. But they look like they're, aside from the passive aggressive moment that was hilarious, aside from that, they look like they're having fun out there as well.
Yeah, and I think that's something that Greg has always tried to put into his teams, that, you know, like there has to be a bit of culture there that's positive, and you know, like the girls have to support each other and stuff. Again, this is from an outsider's point of view. You can always see them after games kind of all huddled around each other and talking. So I think that speaks volumes for the environment he's trying to set, and Annie with the 21s as well. So I think Subi will challenge people this year. I think they'll, you know, I think, I don't know, best of phrase, I guess gobble a few teams up in the running towards the end. I think they'll have says in who finishes where in the league. And you know, I don't think they're the Subi of old, when, you know, that, do you remember the first season where it was double figures and stuff? They're completely different now, which I think is really important, and it's credit to those guys there that are putting that foundation in.
Did you see a like, we'll talk about this in, we could have talked about it in the previous match, but did you see a style of play in terms of what they were trying to do to get a goal? Like, was that kind of bedded in terms of saying, we're going to get a goal by playing through the middle or playing out wide or sending crosses or counter-attacking? Did you notice anything?
I think they're trying to play football a bit more now. I think they're looking to. I think each year Greg's slowly started to, and no disrespect to other players that have played for them in the past, but I think he's slowly started to bring in more players who are a bit more comfortable on the ball, that can, it's not all the time get the ball, play direct, get the ball, play direct. It's okay, we can play the ball around here. We still want to play forward as like quick. We, you know, I think our front line's quite quick in comparison to other teams in the league. And I think what's interesting is how that's going to further help Maz Tabain, who is back as well. So if she's suddenly got more players around her that can link play, and does it make her job even easier? And you know, because I think she had an unreal season last year that just shouldn't go unnoticed.
No, yeah, she's a top player, and when she gets back, if she does have this infrastructure around her, then you can see her going from strength to strength. Danielle Suckling was the other goal scorer, and then a goal for Mum FC was scored by Luana Ascenso Cabello. Luana, if we said your name incorrectly, please send us a quick voice note of how to say your name better. For Mum FC, it's not the best start to the league season could have possibly wished for, but yeah, there's still shoots to kind of work on, right? Yeah. When you mentioned the fact that it wasn't a 4-1 game, so to speak.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of positives. I think the, you know, Murdoch are an almost a brand new squad, right? Across both of their squads in the MPL. So I think this season, we mentioned it in the a couple of weeks back about can we just build, can we just, they're almost having to rebuild, which is what Subiaco did in previous years, right? So it's not the same squad anymore or the same personnel that went on and won the league in that first few years, right? So I think there is positives from that game. I know they've lost, but I think there's positives from it. I don't think they gave up, which I think there are some teams that will give up throughout the year, and they didn't. They carried on, and that's always important. To just make sure that, yeah, we're losing, but we could turn this game on its head. And you know, they did that midweek against NTC, you know. So, yeah, I think two games, again, you take that into account. You know, they played, you know, they had less recovery time, and that can play a part as well, as much as you don't realise it at the time. But I think there's positives for them to take from it. I don't think they need to be too disheartened from that.
No, not at all. Moving on to the next fixture from the weekend. And this is one that I was a little bit surprised to, well, not necessarily surprised, but put it this way. We had four tips in the group chat, and I don't think anyone got this game right. I think everyone kind of looked at Fremantle or looked at a draw or something like that. And so for it to come out and be Hyundai NTC 2, Fremantle 0 was a bit of an eye-opening one. And, you know, kind of taking on what you mentioned just briefly, where I looked at that game and said, this is going to be NTC's, like, third game of the week, right? This is, they just quickly played in the midweek, and it's a quick turnaround. So you'd think that Fremantle would have the better legs there, but it didn't turn out to be the case. So it ended up being Hyundai NTC 2, Fremantle City 0. And I've just got to say, the first goal that they scored for Archibald, what a sensational constructed goal, and what a terrific finish as well.
Yeah, it was a very Ben Anderton NTC goal, wasn't it? It was yeah. Yeah, in person, I actually think it looked better in person as well. And I'm not just saying that, like, and I think credit to Maya, because she does work really hard, and she's one of those players that is really good with the younger girls in my squad as well. So she had a few chances against, you know, in the previous games. I think she started to get a bit frustrated, but I mean, that finish was a joke, really, wasn't it?
Oh, like we honestly, the finish is a joke, but when you see the build-up play, it's all centralized. It's all through the middle. It's all one or two touches. And it's like, I don't know how long the play starts for, right? Because when you see the highlights, when you see the goal, it kind of starts off with like a few more passes to go. So maybe they had the ball for the last 45 seconds. I've got no idea. But through Hope, through Gaspar, they're just composed. They're playing it around. It goes into the middle. It's a couple plays, a couple touches, and then boom, this like through ball. And, you know, like we said, it's you know, asking to see what this goal looks like from certain teams. That was absolutely a Ben Anderton team goal. It's almost one of those ones that you draw it up on the team sheet in the 4-3-3 formation. You're like, all right, and then over here, we're going to have to strike and make this late run and just slip the ball through. Mm. And then it happens on the field. That's going to be amazing.
And I think, look, I don't know if that was probably one of the positives from the game. I don't know if I think there was a lot of errors in the game as well. So he, knowing Ben, you know, he likes to get things right and everything. And to be fair, his players are like that as well. They like to be good at what they do. So I don't know if the goal is incredible. I don't know if as a performance as a whole, they'll be ecstatic about it. I think they know that they'll be things that they can improve on and things, but it's still early doors. It's a very new squad. And so I think positives from that, I think, yeah.
And you mentioned that, you know, it probably leaves the game going, we won 2-0, but there's so much to work on. So I actually tuned in and I watched from about half time to just before the penalty was scored.
Mm.
And it looked like the teams just kind of cancelled each other out, right? It looked like, and I'll be interested to see what the stats actually say about this by getting a look at Squibble, but it looked like the NCC were content to have the ball and they tried to build up play.
Mm.
And they either got stifled, it was a bad pass, or it got shut down in midfield. And then in a really weird way, Fremantle looked to get forward as quick as possible. And I think for moments in that second half, if I'm not mistaken, they had Laura Watman playing as striker, which just means that she's gone the full trifecta from playing centre-back to centre-midfield to now playing striker. So maybe she can win the gold medal playing striker as well.
Golden boot.
But it didn't feel like a whole lot happened.
Yeah. Yeah,
golden boot as well. Golden boot and the gold medal. But it didn't feel like a whole lot happened with the teams cancelling each other out. And it wasn't until Michaela Lyons came on towards the end that they had a little bit more impetus going forward. So what did you notice in that kind of period between 45 minutes and 90 minutes where it just felt like
I agree. That was pretty much, I think, how the whole game went, if I'm being honest. It was very much, but again, it's very similar to Balcata Perth, like we spoke about. A lot of players know each other. A lot of those players in the Freo team have either played with or, you know, trained with the girls in NTC, or, you know, like you get to know the players a lot. So I think a lot of those players in the Freo team have played for Faye before during her NTC era. So I think that always plays a role. You know each other a bit better, so you know you can gamble a bit more on what they're going to do and anticipate that a bit more. So I agree. I think you were. You're just spot on with that. It was very much, we're going to cancel you out. We're going to try to do this. Yeah, we know you're going to do that, but we're going to do this. Yeah, we know you're going to do that. And it's just a big cycle of, yeah, but we know and you know and we know and you, and you know, like that type of thing.
Yeah.
I think big thing for Freo is Clara Herrera I know I've butchered her name and she gets annoyed with me every time, but yeah, she featured. She started and played for Freo, so it's good to see her back in the league. Yeah, so that was a big talking point, I think.
That's mental. She's not even on the team sheet.
Oh, well,
yeah, I'm looking at the team sheet. Plot twist indeed. And so I was actually going to say there's an interesting game happening next weekend, which is going to be Freo versus Subiaco, right? And At first glance, I want to ask the question of Fremantle in trouble, one goal scored, seven goals conceded. But then when you look at the teams that they've played, it's Perth, it's Balcata, and then it's the NTC. This is the two teams in the top four last season, but also a team who we think is going to make a big change and transition and go out from the top four where they were. They weren't in the top four last year, and, you know, a lot of people, myself included, believe that they'll make the top four this year. So, like, where does this kind of stack up for Fremantle City? Because it feels like you could be concerned, but at the same time, you're now playing Subiaco, who are coming off the back of a really good win. But this could be the first game where you really have to eye up and say, this is pretty much must win for us, right?
Yeah, I agree. I think I think what Freo have always been good at is keeping together and keeping supportive as a union. And I think that will be huge for this week. And I think going into the game, that'll be huge because you can't afford to, having played against Freo, like years ago, right. But like having played against Freo and then also coaching against them, you know that they never give
up. They fight so much. So they fight so hard for each other.
Yeah, correct. And I think that's going to be huge this week because I think it is a big game for them. I think they need to be able to be like, no, we're actually all good. Everyone calm down. You're all being a bit dramatic. We're actually just going about our business and we're just settling in. And so I think, you know, and they'll have glory players that will come in as well. You know, other teams will have glory players. So you know, in 3 weeks' time, we might be looking at a different Freo squad, different Freo starting 11 altogether. So I think for now, it's almost, can we plug the gap at this point? So I do think they need to get points from it just to calm everyone.
Yeah, look, and you mentioned now that they're going to get players coming back, or glory players coming back. And again, we're not too sure when they might be able to play, but just to, again, I don't want to harp on and put any more pressure on them, because it is a much transition squad, and it is a much changed team, and there's a lot of young players in that squad as well, and you can tell the job that Faye does is a terrific job. But just understanding that it's 3 o'clock football, and it means we're playing for points, right? And so, you know, when you think of it that way, you understand how pressing it is, because the game after that is Perth or it's the other way. So it becomes one of those ones where it's like, hey, if we don't get 3 points this week coming up, then we're looking at Red Star saying, can we do a big time upset? And then after that, you're then looking at UWA and looking at Mum FC, and you don't want to go into that game feeling really pressing and really tense and really, and then one of those things is just anything unlucky happens and all of a sudden you're now like panicking kind of thing. So we'll be interested to see how they bounce back. But I do think that that's going to be a big game next week, and that could be one of those games where you're seeing a team who is in the ascendancy versus a team who is trying to stop and arrest a decline. But look, we'll use this as an opportunity to take a quick break. We've just got to add a little bit of an insert from one of the interviews that we had earlier with our good friend Mark Madison from the Peak Performance. So this is an insert from the Men's Podcast, where we talk to Peak Performance Institute about the best ways to stretch and activate before the game.
And before we dive back into part two, as promised, here is our interview with Mark Madison of Peak Performance. He's going to tell us all about pre-game routines, stretching. What were you calling it, Kalichi? What
was pre-game activation and warm-ups, Shaunton.
Activations, that's right. So, Mark, let me tell you what we used to do back in my high school footy days, and you tell me whether this is right or wrong. We'd go for a couple of laps, all sit down in a big circle, follow the captain and stretch our hamstrings, our quads, do some other stretches just sitting there, and then get up and do a few ball skills, and then we get out there. Is that the way to prepare our body for action?
I'm afraid that's the way it used to be, but things have changed, evolved, and hopefully for the better with the research behind it. But you're right, even myself, I've come from a different sporting background, but that used to be the case when I was a young whippersnapper, preparing myself, and probably even less of a warm-up even when you're a young whippersnapper. But I'm afraid that has changed. So now you'll find you see less of that static stretching, so less of the staying in one place, you know, reaching forward, touching the toes, grabbing the ankles, pulling the heel towards the backside, you know, all those long-term held stretches. There seems to be a lot less of that now. So what has it evolved to? It's evolved to working with activation of muscles. So as Kalichi sort of alluded to, we're trying to get the warm-up. So the fluid in a muscle is a little bit like tomato sauce in a bottle. If you keep it in the fridge, as it suggests, maybe a discussion for another day, but
we can dive in on that one. Can we we'll get a quick straw poll though, Kalichi. Is your tomato sauce in the fridge or the cupboard?
In the cupboard. I was told by a scientist to keep it there.
Fridge,
Josh.
Fridge.
I don't eat tomato sauce.
Okay, well, give me. Is there any other sauce you do eat?
Yeah, aioli or.
Yeah, but that's always in mayo. The fridge, isn't it? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I go for fridge.
You wouldn't want to keep eggs, processed eggs out of the fridge.
No. But thank you for driving this tangent even further off the road. But yeah, Kalichi, have you been told by a scientist that?
Yeah, that basically they said, look, there's enough preservatives in that thing that it'll be absolutely fine whether you keep it in the fridge or outside.
Yeah, I just prefer a cold sauce. That's all. But anyway, so, Mark, tell us why the muscle's the same.
Well, when you're working with a cold sauce in your legs, that's not going to be too good. And I tell you what, you're going to end up probably with an injury. So the fluid in our muscles, the colder it is, the more it solidifies, the harder it is for it to move around. And the harder it is for the nutrients to get in and the byproducts of exercise to get out. So we warm up. And we all know that we should do a warm up. So what does that curtail now? So we tend to do the movement, the running. But now instead of the static stretching, you'll see players tend to do the leg swings and the dynamic stuff. Now, we touched on this a couple of weeks ago when I was on here before about stretching. So the dynamic stuff, that's where you'll see probably more prominent in AFL football. You'll see the guys link arms and you'll see them swing their legs forwards and backwards and side to side. That is more what it's about. So now we're trying to get that dynamic stretch and the loosening of the muscles done that way. The isometric stretching, where you tend to hold a muscle, does tend to switch a muscle off. Now, that can last for up to half an hour. And if you switch a muscle off, then try to sprint after someone, you're either going to strain something or you're just not going to have the activation and the strength to chase that person down.
Sorry, Kelechi, carry on.
I was going to say, I've seen a bit more, not only in the NPL, but also in like in the Premier League, there's a lot more bands that are being used nowadays. And as Sean kind of mentioned, like the warm-up time is no longer an hour of running and shuttles and, you know, like high intensity movement. It's kind of like 25, 30 minutes, sometimes even less than that. So what's been the kind of big change driving that and the need for, you know, you to use bands now?
So the bands would be well under what an athlete would use for a physical restriction in an exercise. So it's just a light bit of resistance to create that warming of the muscle, get the muscle moving with a little bit of load. And when we burn the calories in a muscle, the byproduct of that is heat. So then that heat goes into the muscle and produces the heat from the inside out, which is what we want to make your source nice and runny.
What about, because I just played my first game of the season on Sunday and I had to go off probably just after. Thank you, Sean. It wasn't a great game. So I had to come off just after 60 minutes because I got a horrific cramp in both hamstrings. What can you do to avoid that? And does the warm-up play any role?
So when a muscle is functional, it's working well, there's no tightness in a muscle, you won't have that fatigue as easily. Now, going into cramping, that could be a debate we would have for 2 to 3 hours on here. And I know there's a lot of
research. I think it's because he doesn't eat enough tomato sauce.
I think it's not enough salt and he's been running all through the week as well.
A lot of salt in your tomato sauce.
That's right. Maybe there's just a quick tangent again. So cramping, there is a lot of research into it. They know there's a lot of factors involved with cramping. Yeah, it's salt, it's fatigue, it's byproducts. There's a lot of different things that cause cramping. Can we define it down to one or two things? No. There's a hell of a lot more that needs to be divulged from research into that. And they don't truly know what is the cause of a cramp or why it happens. Unless there's something come out recently that I haven't read, we don't know. But we know there's a lot of different factors can cause cramping. So I'm afraid, Josh, we don't really know what was causing you cramping on the weekend. However, being stronger, fitter, less tightness, there's less chance of fatigue, and cramping is the sign of fatigue. So that would probably curtail that. Yeah, Cal.
I was just going to ask, I found myself getting a lot of injuries later on towards the back end of playing. And it was basically told to me that you are not activating your glutes. So aside from the glutes, is there any muscle that people really should kind of focus on getting firing and flaring? And could you mention really quickly like why it's important to activate those glutes? Because it hurt my back and it hurt a lot more other muscles as well.
So, okay then. So running with activation, we need to get those big muscle groups going. They support our body. Glutes, so we're talking about the muscles in your bottom. Basically, you sit on them. They're in the back of the hip. They make your legs swing underneath you and in result, push you forward. So they're really important for running. Any of your running sports, they're really, really important. Now, what else works with those muscles? The lower back, the hamstrings and calves all work together, and a little bit of the quads too, of course. So if you've got one or two of those muscles not working how they should, somebody else has to pick up the slack. Mm. And then if your glutes aren't working, hamstrings get overworked and underpaid. And as I say to all my clients, if you've ever been in an office situation where you're getting overworked and underpaid, tell you what, you'll soon be jumping up and down and complaining, won't you? And that's what happens. All your muscles start to complain. They get stiff, they get tight, they get sore. And worst case scenario, they start cramping. Or you get injured, worst case again. So let's not have those people jumping up and down in the corner getting complaints. Get all your muscles working together. That, and activation is a bit about that.
All right. So before we let you go, you said that obviously the isometric, I think you called it, or the static stretching that used to be in vogue has moved out in terms of those pre-game warm-ups and activations.
Yeah.
Does it still have a place in a healthy athlete? Because I've heard it can improve peak performer shortened before. In a peak performer, Mark.
Yeah. So isometric stretching. So the ones where you don't move and you hold it, they tend to be done now more at the end of an exercise routine. Once our muscles are warm, then we can do the stretching. Once you get that warm up in there and you shake up that sore spot a bit and you get the fluid moving around, then you've got more of a chance of doing that. Holding a stretch, now the research shows you should do it a couple of times, hold for about 30 seconds, and you should be able to feel that you can gradually sink into that stretch even further. You can go a little bit longer, and at the end of the day, have better range, less chance of injury, more function.
All right, but don't have that as your only stretching and warm-up before the game as we used to do. Mark, as always, it has been an absolute pleasure to hear your little bits of all those pearls of wisdom.
Thank you.
If people want to hear more of those and get you involved, what do they have to do?
So more than happy for him to come down, contact us down at Peak Performance Institute, which is down in West Leederville. Duck in, say g'day, come in for a coffee. Kel knows what the coffee's like. It's not too bad, is it, mate?
Scrumptious, especially when Mark makes
it. He's an absolute snob.
Yeah, that's it. And I'm sorry, there is another Mark. I'm not the coffee Mark. There's another Mark who's better coffee than me. So
all right.
We're happy to answer questions or come to the aid of people. And we have a big, big group of allied health practitioners that all work out of one office, one space, under one roof. So if you need a team of people looking for you, Peak Performance is the place.
All right. So if you are a budding peak performer, get on down and see Mark and the team. It has been a pleasure having you on once again, Mark. And thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Cheers, Mark.
All right. We'll be back in part two after this.
Thank you so much to Mark for helping us out at Peak Performance Institute. The last game of the round was the Perth Red Star FC against UWA. It ended up 7-0. It was a magnificent 7 for Perth Red Star with big-time goals. I think they had 3 goals outside the box. I think Carol had 2, and one was a stunning free kick that she kind of, like, put away as well. So very much of the same for Red Star. But I also just wanted to say, looking at it, it's just so interesting how they don't overcomplicate the game. I was watching the game and just seeing Lauren Kontatabali having a great time playing on the wing. And for a long time, she didn't play on the wing when she was at Balcata. So it's just kind of like round pegs and round holes. And the quality that they had there as well, as we mentioned, 2 goals from Sarah Carroll, 2 goals from Reina Kagami, 2 goals from Caitlin Douglas, which is just part and parcel of everything that happens there. And then Olivia Wood kind of got off the bench and snuck in a goal as well. So what did you make of the performance? Anything to kind of look at, think about, or notice from the way that they play from the way they play the match?
I think it was just your regular stock standard Perth Red Star. We are here. We're going to go about our business. I'm going to turn up. Thanks for coming. There's my 3 points. I'm going to go home and sleep well tonight. You know, like, it was just, it's exactly what you expect from a Red Star team. I think what was interesting for me is the goals were, they're adding different types of goals now, which I don't think we'd seen previously, which is obviously even more concerning for the rest of the league. So you've got a few, a few long range shots, and free kicks. I think you got two headers in there as well. So, you know, you got crosses coming in, you got long range efforts. We know they can score it on the edge of the 6 because they've been doing that. So I think that was interesting for me.
I think the depth of squad really run out. The fact that you could just bring on Jenna Ridley, Olivia Wood, Katie Ritchie, off the bench, and then you've got the imports as well that's come across. You could just bring this quality off the bench at any time. So I think it's going to be a little bit more of a coaching job that he's going to need to do this season, right? Keeping players happy, knowing when to keep players on form, knowing who to bring in, who to bring out. But I feel like we talk about her every week, but Caitlin Douglas is just a cut above right now. And I think watching her play, the way that she moves the ball, the way that she manipulates the ball, and I think the big thing that kind of sets her apart is just the balance and the control. So you're seeing situations where someone of her speed would typically just focus on being really fast, and then everything is kind of done at a stretch. But there's one of the goals that she literally, it's the same cut and parcel that happened in the night series final, where it's pace, 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 pace. I've slowed down, I've taken a breath, I've looked up, and I've played an easy pass to make it easy for my striker. And I think that's one of the things that really sets you apart as a wide forward, is not just scoring or getting on the end of things, but it's also creating and keeping composed to make it a really easy finish.
Yeah, I think it's always hard, right? As you set up against a player, and you can usually fast players, you know they're going to try and run in behind you, and so you can almost set your team up to like accommodate for that and recognize that's going to happen. But I think with Dougie at the moment, it's if she comes short, do I follow her? Because if I follow her, then you've got, you know, like Kagami just there to just, and then in a split second, or just kidding, she's actually receiving the ball behind me now, and now I'm out of position. Or then, you know, the header, like her movement from the right from the left to make her way into the middle of the six to score a header is, you know, like to recognize the space and to do it quickly and explosively. I think sometimes, I think the change in the speed can sometimes be the difference between what sets apart an excellent player and what sets apart, like, I'm actually all right at my job, but I think she's bridging the top end of the league at the minute.
You think about, again, from my perspective, you think about the fact that they had a top goal scorer a couple of years ago playing in that exact same position, and then they've go and make someone who, just from watching and from the results, is an upgrade. That is frightening. That is absolutely, absolutely frightening. And I think for WA, this is just one of those part and parcel things where you just turn up, take your medicine and go home, brush yourself off, and know that this is going to happen to the vast majority of teams this season. That there is no shame in it, that there is, it's almost in a really cool way. I'll say the same thing that I said when I was covering the Matildas game. I was really lucky enough last season to cover the Matildas game, and I saw them play against Chinese Taipei, and the coach insisted on making his players play at the back. Like, absolutely insisted on it, and said, we want to be able to watch these players and what they do. And even if we fail, we're going to try. And we want to see what exactly we can do and what is possible with talent, with work, with effort. And I think that they can take heart from that in terms of looking at that game and going, okay, this is exactly what is possible. And it's nothing that is going to be out of the ordinary for the league this season as well.
Yeah, I think it's a weird one, because obviously you see the scoreline and you think, oh God. But when you actually watch it, I think there are moments where they were trying to do, I don't want to say the right things, because what does the right things really mean if in football? But they were trying to play, and again, like we said like earlier on in the episode, another team that didn't drop their head. How many different teams have you seen go down, have five goals conceded, and they just switch off? I don't think that was the case. 12. Yeah, and I don't think that was the case for them. So I think maybe they were on a bit of a high of the last few performances and things like that. But Red Star is Red Star, and we know what they're capable of. So I think you've hit the nail on the head by saying there's no shame in it. This will happen to other teams this year, and it probably will be more. They'll probably put more past them. So, you know, so I just think it was just one of those days, really.
Chalk it up to the game, dust yourself off, It doesn't get any easier for them because their next game is against Perth at sea. But yeah, you can take heart from that and kind of keep going from there. Looking forward to the fixtures for round four. We've got a Friday night game, Balcat at Aetna versus Hyundai NTC, which is the Football Friends Derby. Lovely game to get out there and watch as well as one of the 16 Pete Rakic derbies that are out there.
Then we've, 16.
Then we've got UWA Netherlands versus Perth. Perth FC, which from, I don't know if it applies for the men's team, for the women's team as well, but they do have like this kind of special relationship where players get sent on loan in the men's league. But I don't think it'll happen here because they're both in the same league. So maybe that's a derby in its own right. And then we've got Mum FC versus Perth Red Star. And then Subiaco AFC versus Fremantle City, which I think is a huge game, a big game of the round that I'm going to see if I can try to get out there for that one as well. Any of those games kind of catch your fancy, Sam?
You always think of the Balcata NTC Rakic Anderson game as something to look forward to. So, but I think the Subi Frio game is a big one this weekend.
Yeah, if you can get out there and watch as many games as you can, get out there and support the league. Check out the highlights on the YouTube page. Don't forget to rate us, like us, subscribe and all of that good stuff. But we'll finish off. Any more from yourself, Sam?
No, all good from me.
Well, thank you so much for getting on. It's getting late, so I really appreciate your time. And the same from me as well, is to be careful and be kind and look after each other. So take care, everybody. Look after yourself. And how do you say that thing that you say to sign off, Sam?
Tara Rabbit.